Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday, September 14th. 49 degrees here in Old Town Park City with some rain showers. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Yeah, folks, more active weather out there for your Wednesday. Looking at some of the totals, looks like you've had a good almost quarter of an inch in parts of Park City. Park City Mountain Resort reporting 3,500. So good moisture out there, even closer to over a half of an inch. It looks like south of you guys, up higher up on the mountain. So good moisture out there. We're going to continue to see a chance of showers, possibly some thunderstorms throughout some of the day today. Temperatures are going to remain on the cooler side, mid-60s, 64 degrees for the high in Park City. Winds will be a little bit breezy at times. Otherwise, 5 to 8 mile per hour winds is all we're going to be seeing out of the southeast. More showers and storms into Thursday, so we're keeping this active trend into the end of the week. Overnight low should be back in the upper 40s with some showers possible overnight into Thursday, and then more rain likely Thursday night into Friday off and on, with decreasing moisture overall into the weekend. So temperatures staying in the mid to upper 40s overnight into Friday morning, 63 on Friday. A good 50% of chance of showers and storms persists over the higher terrain on Friday afternoon. And then we should still see a chance of showers on Saturday. Still about a 50% chance in the afternoon with temperatures in the mid-60s. Highs near 69 on Sunday with mostly sunny skies. And we should see more sunshine into Monday next week. Temperatures in the mid-60s as well. So, yeah, good rainfall. Not within the flood watch for necessarily Park City, but there could be some heavy rain at times with the flood watches for areas surrounding Park City, essentially the mountain areas south of I-80.
Okay, Nate, thank you.
You bet.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Behavioral Health Director Aaron Newman and with Mental Health Alliance Coordinator Linda Graves. We'll be talking about the final town hall meeting that's happening tomorrow to help shape the next 5 years of the county's behavioral health strategy. Then Park City Municipal Emergency Program Manager Mike McComb and Park City Community Engagement Manager Linda Jaeger will have details about the evacuation exercise happening later this month. The deadline to apply, however, is tomorrow. Finally, Park City photographers Dave Winiger and Amy Eskin have hauled in the awards at this year's Utah State Photography Competition. They'll be in to talk about their winning photos and how they do it. And stay tuned, coming up right after the local news hour for The Mountain Life. Today's guests include licensed therapist Hillary Kennevy and registered dietitian Dana Sturtevant, who have written the book Reclaiming Body Trust, A Path to Healing and Liberation. It's a holistic and powerful framework for accepting and liberating our bodies and ourselves. Then journalist Linda Flanagan talks about her new book, The Back Game, How Money and Mania Are Ruining Kids' Sports and Why It Matters. Stay tuned. It's coming up now on 810 Good Morning. Taking a look at some local news first. A bull moose caught his rack in a Summit Park resident's hammock on Monday. That while trying to attract a nearby cow. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more on that story.
Summit Park resident Lionel Montoya said the bull had spent much of the summer in the vicinity of his yard. His family has seen a cow moose hanging out in the backyard as well. He said the moose have been quiet and calm, sleeping in the grass all summer until Monday when the bull started clanking the Montoya's swing set with his antlers. Montoya said he and his wife were making dinner when their cat became worked up, pacing and mewing, and alerted them to the commotion going on in their backyard.
He ultimately got bored with playing with the swing, and so he went over toward her, you know, just getting his paddles and starting to rub them back and forth along the hammock. He was just kind of playing with the hammock as he was the swings, but he started getting more and more aggressive.
Montoya was worried about how aggressive the bull was becoming and feared it would be injured and that it might knock down the trees holding the hammock. He called the Summit County Sheriff's Office, hoping to get a wildlife resource officer to respond. Montoya learned the DWR, Division of Wildlife Resources, would not be able to come for at least 3 hours. Montoya said the bull was frantically trying to get out of his tangle with the hammock, and then help arrived.
The Summit County Sheriff's Department showed up, those two deputies that you see in the video. You know, they just kind of observed, and you can see that the moose was at that point super agitated. He was grunting. He was doing his best to get out of that panic.
Montoya said the deputies decided to act since the wildlife response wasn't arriving anytime soon.
I think the moose almost realized that those deputies were going to help him in some way, to the point where he went behind the tree and let them get close. And then the video tells the rest of the story from there. If it weren't for those deputies taking on that risk, that moose would have sat in that position until DNR would have gotten there. I think these guys just kind of went over and beyond to help this animal out.
Montoya said the deputy somehow calmed the animal and it slipped behind a tree. He said it took them about a minute to cut the hammock fabric away from the bull's antlers.
It ended up releasing in one clean cut and he was able to run off through the woods. The cow that he was trying to show off for was waiting for him, and they ended up just actually going about their business there in those trees for another hour or two, having some dinner, and they didn't seem to be too afraid of everything that happened, and they actually stuck around the backyard for a while.
The video of how moose can get into trouble on date night is in the online version of this report. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
KPCW News time now, 8:12. KPCW News time now, 8:13. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, two town hall meetings were scheduled for this week to discuss Summit County's Health Department's behavioral and mental health plans. In the studio with details, I have County Behavioral Health Director Aaron Newman, joined by Mental Wellness Alliance Coordinator for Park City Community Foundation, Linda Graves. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning.
So, Aaron, the first meeting was held on Tuesday. Did you get a good turnout for that?
We did, and we got a lot of great information from people. Really what we're doing right now is we've had a lot of committees that Linda can talk about working on reviewing where we're at right now with the previous plan, where were our successes, where do we still need to work on, and what are those new things that we hadn't really thought about before. So the committees have really created the new objectives to our goals for the strategic plan, and this was meant to be to get additional public input, not just what the people at the table knew, but what does the general public have for individuals that have been living with a mental health diagnosis or with a family member?
Okay, so the second town hall meeting scheduled for tomorrow, can you give us just the when and where of that?
It's from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Park City Library, and anyone is welcome. And it's really to walk around, you'll see the five goals that are going to be in the strategic plan that will guide the committees. It's access, prevention, equity, we have success and sustainability, recovery and reintegration. So all of those goals have chairs with committee members that and a total of 48 objectives. So you'll be able to look at the objectives under each of those goals and kind of look at it and identify, gosh, I have questions about this, or why aren't we doing more with, I'm trying to use an example of last night, there were so many people that took sticky notes and put them on the boards as to kind of what they'd like to see maybe more of, or more explanation of what we're trying to do, what's the process to get to the goal, and how maybe they can even volunteer and be involved with the Alliance.
Yeah, let's just take a step back, Aaron, and then talk about, I mean, you're required to have a strategic plan? I mean, why do we have one?
Well, no, this really came out of the work 5 years ago when the community was galvanized to take a look at where we are in terms of behavioral health. What services do we have? What are those gaps? And it came about with the loss of our two Treasure Mountain students. And from that, several initiatives began. And then the Mental Wellness Alliance was created to really bring everyone to the table so we could put all of our efforts together collectively. So they created this community document. I think that's really important to point out. It's not just a county document, but this is something that guides our nonprofits, our clinicians, and the county. We do have the county council ratify it, if you will, and that's just to show the continued support for this work. And when we look at where are we going in the future, this guides us. It guides myself in the work that I do for the county. And this is something that the community wants. So you keep hearing us say it's a community document. Well, if the community wasn't behind us in this and really working and identifying these issues, we most likely wouldn't have had this plan.
Yeah. So when we start talking about some of the you know, the access, the equity kind of issues, I mean, I recall, 5 years ago, we didn't have any place for people suffering a breakdown to go. Has that improved?
It has, and we're going to continue to, what the hope and what I do see optimistically of what we can do is connect Summit County, plays a big role within our community where they hold all the resources that exist here. And as we elevate connect, they will elevate all the services for those, for whatever bucket somebody falls in where they're calling in a crisis. They'll direct as to where they should go. If somebody is uninsured, if somebody needs a bilingual therapist, if somebody's suffering, maybe it's substance abuse, homelessness, whatever that looks like, they'll be able to call this, call Connect, find the resources, where they need to go, what's the wait time, and really what the best fit is.
Yeah, and how have you made improvements in terms of the equity goal?
Well, Latino Behavioral Health, which is amazing, they came up here a year ago, and they are all bilingual therapists. They are right by the Richens building, in the Richens building, actually. And Javier is the executive director, and he's just done a remarkable job of marketing to the Latino population, BIPOC, and more, and working and also collaborating with the other organizations that have been here for quite some time.
Okay, I mean, I can recall just recently where we people couldn't even get in to see a therapist. Has that changed?
It has and it hasn't at the same time. When we talk about behavioral health, we have two different systems. We have the public system, which the county's in charge of, and then we have the private clinicians. We've been able to, with our public network, which serves those on Medicaid and those without the ability to pay, we can cover anyone that has the inability to pay or doesn't have insurance through our public system. We've been averaging about 7 days on that front for someone to get in to see services. But our private clinicians, we're still working on. I talked to some, and they have up to 6 to 7 weeks. Another area that's been both a success, but still it's a concern for us, is our Spanish-speaking clinicians in our community. Through the work of the Alliance, through the work of Connect, we've really addressed stigma in that population. So they're wanting to get services. They understand the benefits. Unfortunately, our number of clinicians hasn't kept up with that demand. People always ask, well, how many do we need here? Well, realistically, we need 30 to 40 Spanish-speaking clinicians to meet the demand in our community. Put that in perspective, as of this year, we're down to 117 clinicians serving the Summit County population locally. We had 132 prior to COVID, but we saw coming out of that a lot of people just deciding, you know what, I'm ready to retire. Let me go enjoy those slopes. Let me enjoy this community I'm in.
Yeah. So, Linda, how is the Community Foundation involved in this?
So it really was so Aaron held the role of the Mental Wellness Alliance coordinator. It was a part-time role. When COVID hit, everybody, all the organizations went into their silos, started to do work independently. As we came out of COVID, we realized, wow, everyone's changed their direction. There's a lot of duplication of efforts. We need a hub. We need a place that people recognize. The Community Foundation's been around a long time. They thought that would be the best fit to bring in a full-time person. To really, again, bring back the alliance that had sort of sat dormant. And again, nobody to blame for that. It was just COVID and the circumstances. And recognizing that it matters that we have a hub. It matters that everybody knows who our organizations are, who can bring everybody as one team. Collaboration, convening, conveying. We work with foundations that do a great service to us. The Marriott Daughters Foundation just gave $700,000 to, I think it was six organizations, which is absolutely phenomenal. And we couldn't do it without them. So she works with us. We work with all the individual executive directors who are so busy, don't have time to look for that funding. So we help do that.
Yeah. So how is that money spent? I mean, specifically for behavioral services?
It is. And so we, like Linda said, a lot of that goes to our community partners. So Connect receives some, the Summit County Recovery Foundation receives some. And a lot of these asks and donations are part of the strategic plan, where what we talk about in there is we have to bring all these resources together and, based on what's in the plan, direct those resources to the appropriate objective.
Yeah, because that's what I was going to ask. I mean, does the plan itself address how to pay for the services?
It will. So it doesn't directly talk about that in the plan, but what's in the plan is we do have a committee that's their whole role, is to, as we move forward with the objectives, sometimes we have things that, as we look at it, as much as we want it, we're just not going to be able to make it financially sustainable. So that group helps to make that determination. But then on things that can be sustainable, we're able to then they'll talk to Linda, give her the important keynote parts for it, and she's able to go out and talk to the funders, which is a part of my job I love handing off to her. I'm so glad to have her here.
And I just want to add, too, so part of the alliance as well, we have a Mental Wellness Alliance Executive Committee, and that has anywhere from the mayor to Marriott Foundation. We have city council members. They're also going to be part of this, where they're looking at each of these organizations, each of these goals and the committees. What are they doing? What is the strategic process to get to the goal? What funding is needed? And utilizing every single person's resource. We also have conduits. So you've got some of the therapists in the high schools that they can be the conduit that we speak to when we need a survey filled out or we just need data. We have a data and assessment committee. Aaron is actually stuck still working on the data. He is the data guy. So that's also going to drive the direction and how we reach some impact in our community.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about, you know, since the last mental health community survey done, 5 years ago, you've seen some pretty incredible accomplishments. Can you talk about some of those?
Definitely. I think for me, stepping back, just seeing the continued support from the community is a big part of that. But more specifically, we now have a mobile crisis outreach team that's serving our community. Our goal is still trying to get that to be 24/7, but like everyone else, it's hard to find people to work for this, especially when you consider just the cost of housing. I know this is nothing new, but an example is our director of the MCOT commutes every day from Payson down in Utah County to come up here and serve our community. Our Latino work has just been amazing. Eric Escoval is the chair of that committee. They continue to do these educational workshops and seminars for our Spanish-speaking community that has upwards of 500 people in attendance. Other aspects, the clubhouse was part of the previous strategic plan. That's fully up and running as its own independent 501c3 in our community and serving the population. And another big part is we brought in the Huntsman Mental Health Institute to provide services to the community, and that's really addressed a lot of the wait times.
Yeah, what about some of the services that have been provided in our schools?
So that's been another huge win. When we made the transition to the Huntsman Mental Health Institute, we were able to put therapists in every single school here in Summit County. And what a lot of people don't understand or are aware of, that service actually falls to the county to provide. It's not up to the school districts to provide. And when we transitioned, we saw the numbers go from upwards of maybe 20 or 30 students a year to almost 400 this past year of students being served in all three school districts in the winter sports school. And moving forward, Huntsman is actually taking over that contract directly, and what will be a benefit of that is if we have a youth that needs a path into some inpatient care or a day treatment program, instead of getting a recommendation and then another evaluation, we can streamline that for that youth to get the more advanced help that they need from the schools.
Okay. I didn't realize that Huntsman had spread its wings to include mental health. I mean, we've always known it as the kind of the cancer institute, right?
Well, about 3 years ago, the Huntsman family gave a multi-million dollar donation to what people used to know as UNI, the University Neuropsychiatric Institute. And so they changed their name. So when you see Huntsman Mental Health Institute, those are the services being provided thanks to the Huntsman family.
All right. So again, tomorrow it's happening from 6 to 8 p.m. What, in the community room? Is that where you're doing it, on the third floor?
Yes, at the Park City Library. Yeah. And it's, and it is not a formal, you do not have to be there right at 6. Again, come whenever you are able to walk around, ask us questions, look at what these objectives are underneath the five goals that we have revised since 2017, and you know, we're applying to what the greatest needs are in our community, and we've learned what the gaps in services are, and that's what we hope to address.
Okay, and then when does this new plan get published or posted on the website, or I mean, what do you do with it?
So the next steps is we'll take all this information back to the committees, and they'll look at seeing what tweaks need to be made or what new objectives do we need to create. Example is postpartum depression. That's not been on our radars, but based on the stories that were shared with us last night, we need to take that back and look at adding that. Once that's been finalized, in November, we're actually presenting to the Summit County Council for their approval of the plan, which is a critical component because that opens us up to federal, state, and local funding for a lot of these objectives. So come December, we'll have a new plan ready to go and in place.
Okay. Anything else you want to add?
I just want to add, we want the community to be a part of this. This is, nobody owns this. We know mental health is something that everyone can identify with. Everyone has their own story. As Aaron said, the postpartum, we never even thought of that. There's so much to think about. We have seniors here. More and more people are aging into staying here longer. And I work with the seniors, and they're phenomenal. So it's cradle to grave, as I say. But it's true. Everybody is affected by mental health, and we all need to help each other out.
Okay. Linda Graves, Aaron Newman, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour. Once again, that opportunity to give your input will be held 6 to 8 p.m. At the Park City Library there in the third floor community room. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:27. Coming up now on 8:28. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Once again, we've got 50 degrees here in Old Town Park City. National Weather Service today calling for showers, possibly a thunderstorm, looking for a high today of 73. And in the Heber Valley right now, we've got 55 degrees, again, looking for showers and a high of 73 as well. Well, Park City Municipal is hosting an evacuation exercise later this month. Residents who want to be part of it must register by 5 o'clock tomorrow. On the phone with details, I have Park City Emergency Manager Mike McComb. In the studio is Park City Community Engagement Manager Linda Jager. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
There you are, Mike. So, Mike, is this only about wildfire evacuation, or should we lump in environmental spills, earthquakes, and mudslides?
Absolutely. Yeah, you nailed it, Leslie. This is the exercise itself is geared around a wildfire scenario, but there are several incidents in which we might have to conduct an evacuation. So just being prepared for all eventualities.
All right, so tell us what's going to happen then on September 28th. When is the actual evacuation exercise happening?
Yeah, exactly. So on September 28th at 9 o'clock, participants will receive an exercise message telling them to assemble in a simulated safety zone, Lower Deer Valley, and by 10 o'clock, and then there they will receive further instructions, and we will route people out of town to simulated evacuation zones. We'll be doing this in collaboration with Park City Fire, Park City Police, Highway Patrol, Summit County Public Safety Dispatch, Utah Division of Emergency Management, Summit County Emergency Management, a whole host of partners. Just regional collaboration is what we're after here.
Okay. Well, when I think about, you know, places that might be the most difficult to evacuate from in Park City would be Upper Daly and Lower Deer Valley, or, you know, in Deer Valley. I mean, why is that? Why you're starting there, just to see how things work?
It is. It is. So Lower Deer Valley, we've identified as one possible key spot. Of course, circumstances of a major incident like this are always going to vary, but that area would be a good staging zone, if you will, or safety zone that would allow us to gather people, get them in a temporary spot of safety, and then get them out of town when conditions permit.
Yeah, and again, you think about this time of year, no traffic on Deer Valley Drive. I mean, in the event of an emergency, when there's people maybe coming out of a Deer Valley concert or something, and we don't want to test it that way?
that's a great question. We very much do prepare and need to prepare for kind of those peak traffic days, special event days when we've got, 60, 70,000 people in town for whatever the event may be. This is kind of a key low-stress way to do it that will allow us to examine those processes and make changes where we need to.
All right. So these folks that actually participate will have a pretty good idea of how things work. It'll give you, the city and emergency team, better idea of how it works. What about the rest of the community? I mean, how are they going to know what to do in the event of an evacuation?
Right. So what we would do is use our emergency mass notification system. We would reach out to you, our media partner, any means necessary to get the word to visitors and residents and businesses in town on the situation, what's going on, what to expect, and how to get out of town should the need arise.
Yeah, so how will this exercise then help you in terms of your putting together, you know, your evacuation plan?
This will be the final key of testing the city's evacuation plan that we put together last spring with a range of regional stakeholders. We held a tabletop exercise to test the plan shortly after it was developed. All the participants felt like it was workable, and this is kind of the proof in the pudding, if you will.
Yeah. So apparently this was planned for a year ago, and then as it was being planned, fire broke out in Parley's Canyon that actually did force the evacuation of people. So we've just kind of pushed it back till now?
Exactly. Yeah, we were. That's precisely right. We were in the process of planning this exercise for spring of this year when that fire broke out, and we just did it for real.
Yeah. So this is, we're talking just kind of the municipal boundaries here, or are you working in concert with Summit County? Are they doing something similar?
So we are working very much with Summit County, and we're inviting folks in throughout Summit County to participate if they would like. It is geared towards getting people out of Park City with its kind of unique geographic or topographic features. You know, we live in a box canyon and with some limited routes into and out of town. So it is focused on an incident within Park City limits or threatening Park City limits.
All right. And I know that there have been a marked evacuation points. Because I know there's one, in the China Bridge parking garage, the parking lot there in City Hall, mm-hmm. that just shows a evacuation. I mean, meet here. And I think that is just maybe for City Hall employees. Are there other defined evacuation areas already?
Well, so that's a great question. One of the things that we considered when putting the evacuation plan together was the fact that the circumstances can change such that having a defined route, given our high tourist population, we may not want people to take a certain route. So we wanted to keep the plan flexible, adaptable, and scalable, so that we can adapt that to the circumstances. We certainly don't want to send people through into harm's way, if you will. Based on a predefined route. So we wanted to keep options open.
Okay. All right, Linda, you've got reaching out for people to be part of this. How many people have registered so far?
Well, we have a goal of 50, which is actually the primary number that we would need to effectively do this exercise. As of this morning, I believe we're at 44. So about 6 more by the end of tomorrow is our deadline. And folks can register. We've got a link on our homepage at parkcity.org. There's a news item that will take you right to the registration, or you can go directly to bereadyparkcity.org and register right there. So it's really key. Another timing of this exercise, it's National Preparedness Month, so it's a great exercise for residents, families to participate in this exercise.
Okay. And what's going to happen? Because it's like a 4-hour day.
Yes. So as Mike mentioned, things will start at 9, I believe, with a notification. Folks will gather at 10, and the exercise will wrap up at the, I believe we're heading out towards Richardson Flat, and we'll wrap by 1 o'clock. And we also look forward to working with you, the media, having some come out and go through the exercise of how we work with media on site. And we'll also need to let folks know what's happening that day, so letting them know it's a drill and not to be alarmed.
Okay. Anything else people ought to know?
Just come on out. We parkcity.org or bereadyparkcity.org and register, and we look forward to working with you that day.
Okay. Anything from you, Mike?
No, that's fantastic. We are, so one note that that I would like to highlight is that we are also getting the participation of several volunteer organizations active in disasters, or VOADs, to include American Red Cross, Team Rubicon, as well as a number of other VOAD partners. And these are organizations, charitable organizations, who band together and provide a variety of services to citizens when a major disaster like this happens. And they'll be doing presentations to participants out there at Richardson Flats, and we've got a number of other displays and readiness info that will be available out there as we talk through lessons learned and other key points of the exercise itself.
All right. Hey, Mike and Linda, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:38. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, Thursday at 5 o'clock is the deadline for Summit County property owners to file an appeal with the Board of Equalization that if they disagree with this year's property valuations. Property taxes pay for public services. The majority of those taxes go to pay for education. The remaining dollars get split among cities, the county, and special service districts. The tax rate is determined every August by the county assessor's office using a mass appraisal system. While every individual property gets a detailed review every 5 years, properties can be appraised every year using sales of comparable properties in the area. According to the assessor's office, last year, single-family home sales prices in Summit County went up 58%. What that looks like based on the tax records of an actual home in Colville is in 2017, the home was valued at $450,000. Today, that home is valued at more than $1.4 million. In 5 years, the property tax on the house jumped from $815 a year to more than $1,100 because of the booming real estate prices. Owners can appeal their property taxes, but interim Summit County Manager Janet Young says the county council will need supporting documentation to prove that the property is not as valuable as the assessment claims.
It's also important that these property owners provide documentation and evidence to show a different value because those applications will not be accepted if that evidence is not provided.
If the documents show that the property is actually undervalued, owners do run the risk of paying even higher taxes as the assessor can make adjustments in both directions.
I don't know how often that happens. I do know once the auditor's office receives the application, they send it back to the assessor's office, which gives allows the appraisers to go back in and review all of that documentation and that information, and then they do make adjustments accordingly. So it is a pretty thorough investigation review process to come to that recommendation for the Board of Equalization.
To file an appeal, you can find the link in the web version of this story at kpcw.org. Property owners can also bring their appeals and supporting documentation to the assessor's office at the county courthouse in Colville. KPCW News Time now, 8:40.
Carlos Segura here, executive chef at the new Dos Olas Cantina. Our name means two waves, a nod to the one that keeps us inspired on the mountain and in the sea. We're proud to join the community and support KPCW. We offer Mexican cuisine and drinks. Our bar has a slopeside patio and live music all summer. Now open in Pendry Plaza at Canyons Village. More at dosolasparkcity.com.
The Summit County Republican Party is hosting a town hall tonight to discuss those property tax valuations. KPCW's Kimberly Flores has more about that.
The town hall in Park City Wednesday night is billed as an opportunity for citizens to voice their concerns over recent property tax valuations. Summit County residents were notified by mail last month of their updated property values and upcoming tax bills. Roughly 20% of property owners in the county saw an increase in taxes, while other county residents will see new assessments over the next several years. In total, the county's market value came in at $46 billion, a 38% increase over last year. Summit County Republican Party Chairwoman Karen Balish is one of the meeting organizers. She said bloated home values have resulted in unfair tax valuations, and residents haven't been given the opportunity to be heard by state and county officials.
We all heard from the assessor, and she had two meetings, one of which one of the councilmen picked up his computer and walked out. So this is a chance to hear from the state representatives, who are all incumbents, who've all been representing all of Summit County for the last 2 years.
Despite having only Republican representatives and council candidates on the meeting's flyer, Balish says this is a bipartisan event where any resident can come and speak.
People have a right to uninhibited, robust, and wide-open debate, especially on issues which hit them in their pocketbook. After all, we fought a war against taxation without representation.
Wednesday night's town hall will be held at the Santee Auditorium at the Park City Library from 6 to 8 p.m. Information on how to appeal the property tax valuations will be made available to those in attendance. The deadline to appeal property values is 5 p.m. Thursday, September 15th. Appeals can be made online. Appeal and tax relief information can be found in the web version of this report. Kimberly Flores, KPCW.
Well, five local photographers won awards at this year's Utah State Photography Competition. Joining me in the studio are two of them, David Weiniger and Amy Eskin. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So it sounds like you both raked up a bunch of awards. What did you earn, Amy?
I won two fourth places and an honorable mention in the advanced amateur category.
All right. So what is that advanced amateurs class mean? I mean, how is that defined?
You define yourself. So it had to do with how big you could make your pictures, how large. And so I wanted to do larger pictures, then you had to be an advanced amateur. I've been taking photography classes and using professional equipment for years. So I think it's fair that I'm an advanced amateur.
Yeah. And then what about you, David? Because you're considered a professional. Is that because you make a living as a photographer? I mean, is that the difference here between amateur and professional?
It is. And Amy's stuff's amazing, so she should bump up to professional next year. Yes, I've had a photography business in Park City for 20 years.
Okay. So what did you score with?
So I had four ribbons. I took two second place awards, one in wildlife and a second place in the black and white category. And then I took another second place for some wild Mustangs and an honorable mention.
Okay. And you're up against then every photographer in the state of Utah? Is that how it works?
Everybody that enters, yes.
Okay. Any idea?
In the professional category.
Yeah. Any idea how many were entered?
One of the judges told me typically about 1,500, but he hadn't done a count for this competition overall, 1,500 to 2,000.
Wow, so that's competitive.
It is.
Yeah, and Amy, any idea how many were in the amateur class or the advanced amateur class?
I think 1,500 covered
total.
It all.
Total, yeah, that's
total. Oh, okay,
total.
All right. So talk a little bit about your photos, Amy, that won.
Well, I had two photos taken at Yellowstone National Park of bison. One, I entered into the humor category. It was a little bison rolling around in the dirt. And I called it, and the wild things showed their terrible eyes. And then I had another buffalo, a bison, it was a mom and a baby, and I watched it happen. The baby nearly drowned, and the mom was crossing with a whole family of buffalo, and she turned around because the baby wasn't there, and she went back, and you so badly wanted her to reach her arms up and hold the baby, but of course that's a human instinct, and she doesn't have arms. So you just watch her just go over to the baby with her mouth and sort of, I mean, we put our own emotions into this and think it was a kiss, but it was probably a nudge, and I caught that moment, and I was very happy. You don't really know what you get till you get home, and I was very happy I caught that. And so that was another one. And the last one was a picture I took in the desert outside of Joshua Tree, and I actually joined a meetup of photographers out there who knew exactly where to go and when to do it, and we waited for the moon to set. Who knew the moon set? But photographers know. And so we waited for the moon to set. And when it did, the stars just came out and you could see the Milky Way. And it was so gorgeous. And they taught me how to light up the foreground with a headlamp while you're taking a long exposure picture. It was pretty complicated, but they made it very simple for me. And if you followed along, it was spectacular. And so, again, when you get home, you know what you got. And I was just amazed by Jupiter is in the picture. And I was amazed by what I was amazed standing there looking at it and then just so happy with the pictures when I got home.
Yeah, I bet. Dave, tell us about some of the photos that you submitted.
Okay, there's an image that I took called Winter Dreams, and I entered that in the black and white category, and it's of wild American Mustangs located in Utah. And that was in February of last year, where the temperature is about 10 degrees and the snow is about a foot deep. I had a four-wheel for a few hours to try to find the Mustangs. They're hard to find in the winter because they're up in slot canyons getting out of the weather and the wind. And finally found the herd, and there were two, appeared to be albino Mustangs. And it was so cold out there, and they were standing next to each other, almost, looked like they were almost frozen with their eyes closed, as if it took too much energy to even open their eyes, trying to stay warm. So I captured that picture, and then, so that took the second in wildlife, and it also took the supervisor's award for excellence in printing. And then another image that took second place. I'm sorry, that didn't take second in wildlife. It took second in black and white. And then I had a wildlife picture. It's called Baby Owl Up on the Rooftop. And I made owls my focus for about pretty much the whole summer. Just listening every evening, trying to locate the owls. So this is in the Silver Springs neighborhood. And this owl had two babies. And one evening, one of the baby owls flew up on the rooftop. So it's called Baby Owl Up on the Rooftop. And it was the most perfect, beautiful light, setting sun. And the owl was so small, it was as if it couldn't even stand up without putting its wings down to support itself. And then it looked right at me with this beautiful warm light. And I knew that picture was gonna be amazing. I mean, sometimes luck happens, you know, when everything collides. But so that one, and then I had one other wild Mustang picture.
Yeah, so with the owl, did you have the flash on? I mean,
No. Oh. That was telephoto lens. The owl was probably 30 yards away, and it was just beautiful, natural evening light. So, the flash wouldn't work for that distance and wasn't needed because of the beautiful evening golden hour light.
Yeah, so is that just based then on the exposure then? I mean, right, to make sure that it was well lit enough without being too grainy?
I'm going to manage the settings in the camera to, you know, achieve the desired artistic look that I need. But basically the owl in sharp focus and the natural sunset was my light source.
Yeah, I mean, I remember taking a photography class with an old Olympus OM-1, right, where there was nothing automatic about anything. I mean, it was very difficult, very, very precise. How have things changed over at least your careers?
Way more difficult.
They are still?
The camera can do so much that you really, it takes a very long time to learn all of the buttons. The camera can, I mean, you said automatic. I'm not talking about anything automatic, but you can set it to do something automatically for you. But you have to know how you want it set. And these cameras, especially, I just got a brand new one after I took these pictures, but the brand new ones are so sophisticated. It's unbelievable what the camera can do.
Yeah, what's your experience, David?
The cameras have become so complex that it actually takes some of the joy out of it for me, because what you need to do is deliver your artistic vision using manual settings. Most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time. And one of the things I did about 10 years ago was I went to Capitol Reef and I took my Canon AE-1 film camera with two rolls of film. And instead of coming back with 1,000 pictures, you know, where you're spraying and praying is one of the jokes in the photography industry, you know, eventually you might grab a nice picture. I knew that every one of those I was going to have to pay to get developed. And I came home with 12 pictures that were amazing because I just looked for beautiful light, beautiful composition, and I kept passing up different scenes until I found one that's like, wow, everything's coming together. Now, I say 12 good ones, but out of that, usually maybe one might be something that you say, hey, that's a great picture. That's a sellable picture. Oftentimes, you can go out for days, and you don't have that collision of everything that comes together and have an award-winning picture.
Yeah. Well, that's got to be easier, though, the fact that you have this just the digital card as opposed to having to buy film and develop the film.
Yes.
Yeah. I just got to make note, though, we all think we're photographers with our cell phones, right? And, I mean, one of our reporters here, Andrew Buchanan, of course, winning first place in the iPhone competition photography for nature. So you can take pretty good pictures. I mean, does anybody submit photos in photography contests? Besides?
I have submitted cell phone photos, and I won two honorable mentions. But the pictures are beautiful, but if you want to blow them up big, the brand new cell phone that just came out, the brand new iPhone, is going to have enough pixels in the pictures to blow them up big. But before that, you are stuck with a smaller picture if you really thought it was gorgeous and wanted to blow it up.
Yeah. And do you use your cell phone as just for
sometimes
fun?
when I don't have my pro camera and lenses with me, sometimes there's just scenes that show up that you've always got that with you. So that's made photography accessible to pretty much everybody. I mean, it's amazing. And like Amy said, those little phones are delivering some pretty amazing pictures these days.
Yeah, now it sounds like you're all part of what is the Park City Photography Club. I didn't even realize we had such a thing, but you do meet monthly?
Meet once a month, and David Bressler is the president of the club. He calls himself the sheep herder. So I'm actually just a new member of that. COVID's kind of shut that down for quite a while, but he started that back up and reached out to me. So I've been to a couple of meetings, and it's a great resource for anyone that wants to come. You can go to Facebook and just go into Park City Photography Club, and you can see what's going on. And the meeting is at the Park City Library. I think it's in room 101.
Yeah.
The ground floor. And there's a lot of very experienced photographers there. Bill Silliman's another photographer that I've known a long time, and he took first place in fine art, did a great job, local photographer here. And then David Bresser also took awards, one for a cowboy scene, a first place for a cowboy scene up in Wyoming. So yeah, I'd love to have everybody come out, join, and sharing information. We're all there just to learn and have a lecture on a topic that David picks, or sometimes we have guest speakers come in.
Ah, okay. Yeah, so that does happen on the third Monday of the month at 6:30, again in room 101 at the Park City Library. So in addition to your ribbons and bragging rights, cash involved here? Any winnings?
A little bit. I think I got $50 times two, and I can't remember what the honorable mention was, but there's a small monetary
Yeah, barely paid for a tank of gas.
This is a very, very expensive hobby. So it's nice to win an award, but it doesn't even cover the card.
It is a submit to get your prints done for competition level. It can be very expensive.
Yeah, and back in the day, I mean, right, you used to be able to just develop those yourself with black and white photos. Now they go to a professional printer.
Print their own. Some of the professionals in the club do their own printing, but then they have to be mounted. Typically, you're not going to have a mounting machine, but they need to be mounted on quarter-inch gator board for this particular competition. So you have to, farm that out.
Yeah. Here in Summit County, every year the council will buy a piece of art from the fair. Anything happen with that in terms of the fine arts for maybe something showing up at the Capitol, or you're not aware of anything that the state fair does?
I know the state fair picks certain images that go on a traveling exhibition, and typically those images showcase iconic things in Utah. And so I did see some of those that were earmarked for that, that they will be in the traveling exhibition.
Okay. Anything else you guys like to say about your experience with this? And
I just love photography. I love it. It's a challenge. I say it's like golf. You never get to the bottom of it. You can't learn everything. There's always more. I mean, he's been a professional photographer for years and years, and he still goes to the club and learns. And I love that aspect of it. You're never finished. And even the judging is subjective. And so we can talk about forever why something didn't win first place. And it's that's exciting to me.
Yeah. David, any?
Yeah, most of the time I just feel like such an amateur at this. I mean, it can be like so humbling, but right now is like one of the best times to get out there. A day with a blue sky is not a great day for photography. It's harsh light, and now when I was driving in, I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish I would have got up with these clouds that are in fog hanging over in the mountains, and the leaves are gonna be popping here, and this place is gonna explode in color. So get out, and while you're doing your photography, take a moment to step away and quit thinking about photography and just enjoy a moment.
Okay, well, congratulations to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. That's Amy Eskin and David Weiniger, again, two of the five local photographers winning awards at this year's Utah State Photography Contest. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 50 degrees again, looking for some rain today, expected high of 64, and in the Heber Valley, we've got 56 degrees with some rain, looking for a high of 73. A reminder that the Park City Council is holding its semi-annual retreat this morning at the Christian Center there, just off Deer Valley Drive. It's a special opportunity for the City Council to pivot and to set some new policy goals. Today's meeting has a much lighter agenda than the two-day retreat that is held in February. Beginning at 11:15 this morning, the council will review its liaison assignments and consider potential items for its future meetings. Each member of the council serves on several boards and commissions. Park City Manager Matt Dias says that sometimes they like to switch up those liaison positions. Possible topics the council will look to prioritize for future meetings will include winter programming in Bonanza Flat, the use of the former Maverick gas station on Bonanza Drive, and a regional recreation agreement. Later on, the council will dig into some planning issues this afternoon, specifically around the Bonanza Park and Snow Creek neighborhoods. You've been listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.